WVXU's Cincinnati Edition. I'm Marianne Zalesnik. The art of yoga has been around for thousands of years, but the practice is as different as the hundreds of classes available. We're going to talk today about yoga, and later in the hour, we'll hear how children who receive social and emotional instruction have improved academic achievement. Joining me now are 17-year yoga teacher and Thai yoga therapist Donna Kovret and instructor and owner of the Yoga Bar, Rachel Roberts. You can join the conversation by calling 513-419-7100 or email us, talk@wvxu.org. You also can find us on Facebook and Twitter. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Good afternoon.
Glad to have you both here.
Thank you.
Now, I think we're to a point in time, which wasn't true maybe half a century ago, where everybody's at least heard of yoga, I think. But I'm not sure that everybody, at least people that don't regularly practice, know what it is. And I thought the best way to start would be to have you define what yoga is. And Rachel, we'll start with you.
Okay, thanks. For me, yoga is a spiritual discipline, and I think it bears conversation that it's a wheel with eight spokes. In the West, we have a tendency to get really focused on the physical form of yoga. So if you ask someone here if they do yoga, they'll say yes because they practice asana, or the physical form. In the East, a lot of times people will say they do yoga because they practice meditation, and neither is the full wheel. So it's things like they're considered the yamas and the niyamas, or the code of ethics of the yogi and how to live by them, and then the discipline of the breath. The physical practice is one of the limbs as well. And things like an internal gaze, a single-minded focus that lead to meditation. And when those seven spokes come together, then we get what's called samadhi or bliss, and that's why we practice.
Bliss, that's a good thing. I like that. Donna?
I think for me, at its most basic, yoga is a mindfulness practice about being present-centered. And the word yoga itself means union. So it's a practice that unites body, mind, and spirit in sort of a psycho-physical discipline. You know, by strengthening and disciplining the body and mind, it helps to develop powers that already exist naturally within us.
Well, you talk about being present-centered. What does that mean?
Present-centered? I guess the easiest way to define it would be about paying attention on purpose, you know, in the present moment, without judgment.
So sort of focusing on what you're doing right now and not while you're doing yoga, also thinking about what you're going to cook for dinner when you get home and that sort of thing. Is that what you mean?
Yeah. I mean, our mind wanders. I mean, we're a multitasking culture. And while that's beneficial to us for living in this culture, it's also disengages us from ourselves. It keeps taking us out of whatever it is we're doing. And anything worth doing is worth doing well and mindfully.
I should say that I do take a yoga class, have for a number of years now. And what I have found is every class is as different as the instructor of the class. And I wonder, how would you recommend, if someone's never taken a yoga class before, where they should start? How do they decide, gosh, this would be the right class for me?
A few things. I'd first say that they should try several classes. So give yourself permission, especially if you're brand new to the practice, to not be good at it at first. It's really, you know, as we become older and older, it's less frequent that we do something for the very first time. So I'd say if anyone's interested in starting a practice, go try several teachers in several different studios. There's not a one-size-fits-all for every person anymore. So you do that until you find a teacher or a group of teachers or several across maybe one studio or several studios that help you form what's called a sadhana or a personal practice. So maybe you find three teachers at three different studios and you go to each of their classes once a week so that you get that three times a week practice where things really start to evolve and change. But give yourself permission to go to a few classes and not enjoy them, because there are classes that are really fiery or classes that are less fiery, and you'll find the ones or the one that is the right fit with you if you're patient and you try enough of them.
I agree. I mean, exactly what Rachel said. Don't just go to one class or two classes and say, this in for me and give up. You know, just try a few, just as she said. That's right.
And when you come, I think it's important to point out, it doesn't matter necessarily if you have the right clothes or the right, you have to wear those. But
yes,
you don't need
to
buy special yoga clothes.
No, not so much. You don't need the coordinated outfits. But you don't want anything that's restrictive. That's what's important in the kind of clothing you wear. So you shouldn't have snaps or buckles around your waistband. Whatever you wear should allow you to move freely and to be comfortable. Yogis practice barefoot for steadiness. So we remove shoes and socks. They're called sticky mats for a reason, to help you stay grounded and not slide all over the place, especially as you start to build sweat. You don't have to be fancy. And most yoga studios are not. I don't think you see, at least in ours, I see everybody in every kind of wear.
Yeah. The only thing I would add to that is that if you're coming for the first couple of times, know that loose-fitting clothes can be somewhat problematic. We do right. turn ourselves upside down. So, like, loose T-shirts, not necessarily. So something that's a little more fitted or could be tucked in.
Right.
And then just, like Donna said, anything that's comfortable and easy to move in. We sort of joke that yoga clothes look a lot like your pajamas. So,
what about who can do it? I mean, are there physical constraints? Can anybody practice yoga?
I think so. I mean, anyone can. I mean, even someone bound to a chair, you know. Yoga builds, it tones and elongates muscles. It builds reserve strength. It brings focus to the mind. It's mindful movement. It's movement or meditation in movement would be the best way to say it. And anyone can practice that. A lot of people, you hear people say, well, I'm not flexible, so I can't come to yoga. Well, that's why you come. You come to get flexible and to build strength. I've never seen anybody unroll a mat and bust out a posture, except for maybe like a 7-year-old girl. You know? I mean, it just doesn't happen. We all get there. We all go there to get strong and flexible. So, yes, to that, Rachel, anything you want to add?
I completely agree. And I think one of the key components to any yoga practice is always going to be the breath. And so right. even if someone were immobile or infirm at the time, then a yoga practice would help them learn to deepen and slow the breath and find the mindfulness of the practice that way.
And I tell people, I actually tell students that if you only take one thing from a yoga practice, I mean, I know they're going to take more. But if you only take one thing, take the mindful breathing, because that alone can completely impact and change your day-to-day life.
Now, in most exercises, and I don't know if we want to call yoga exercise class necessarily. That may not be – that's simplifying it, certainly. But in many cases, people are advised to check with their physicians first. Go see their doctor before they start that. Do you think that's true with yoga also?
I do, especially if people have concerns. I also think that a lot of people find yoga for the very first time because of injury or some kind of traumatic experience that they've gone through. And yoga is a beautiful tool for that. But if you're coming to any new physical practice from a place of less than, you know, your normal state of health, then, yeah, I think it's very worth talking to your doctor beforehand and then also bringing that information to your teacher so they can amend and adapt a practice in a way that's safe and most useful to you.
Correct. Yeah.
Well, talk absolutely. About that. I know that that's true in my class, but there are certain things that some people can do, have issues with their knees or their backs or whatever. And you really can adapt yoga to your own body.
Well, you walk into a lot of yoga studios nowadays and you see a shelf on the side wall with all kinds of toys or props. And those are props, blocks and straps and blankets and bolsters. And all of those props are to help people who are constricted in movement or who are recovering from some kind of injury or have some kind of chronic pain, to help ease them into a posture or to support them into a posture. And then also it's the quality of the teacher. There's all different kinds of instruction out there, and there are some teachers that are really trained well in alignment and therapeutics and can help people. So if you are limited in some way, that would be a good way to look for a teacher as well, is to find someone who's really trained in therapeutics and alignment.
Talk about the training. What kind of training do you have to go through to be a yoga what's the correct word? Instructor? What's the proper title?
To be an instructor. It's a really interesting topic. So there's really one governing body currently called the Yoga Alliance that oversees all yoga teacher training programs. And the basic guideline for that is that it's a 200-hour training. And that's there are some other stringent guidelines in there, like there must be a certain number of hours of anatomy, a certain number of hours of philosophy. But it's actually a pretty loose framework beyond that. So it makes it a little challenging, I would think, as a new student trying to understand who's a good teacher, what's a good school of yoga, who's the right person to help me in any certain situation. So there's a Sanskrit term called parampara. Parampara means direct lineage. So one way that you can start to understand, you know, what a school is about or how seasoned the teachers might be is how close they get to the original lineage of yoga. So it's kind of a long conversation to be had. But for instance, Donna and I both come from pretty short lineages. That is to say that we are one or two steps away from the original founders of the kinds of yoga that we teach. There are other schools where someone might be five or six lineages away, which isn't to say they're not a really phenomenal teacher. It's just one way that you might be able to see how tied into the original lineage of a school that a certain studio that you're interested in going to is.
Also, the 200, 500 hours, whatever, that it might say behind, that doesn't necessarily tell you whether someone's a great teacher. Someone may have a body of knowledge, but not translate that knowledge well to be able to translate it well. So it goes back to what Rachel was saying a little bit ago about trying a few different schools, trying different styles of yoga, which there are several different styles out there, and trying different teachers and seeing what you resonate with and what makes sense to you. You'll know.
Yeah. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. We're talking today about yoga, and my guests are 17-year yoga teacher and Thai yoga therapist, Donna Kovret, and instructor and owner of the yoga bar, Rachel Roberts. If you have a question or a comment, we'd love to hear from you. 513-419-7100. Email us, talk@wvxu.org. Let us know if you do yoga and if you like it and what you do and don't like about it when you call 513-419-7100. You mentioned styles of yoga and the many different styles. Can you easily explain what they are?
Oh, well, let's see. You know, yoga is an umbrella. There's one large umbrella of yoga that basically, like I said at the beginning, is a mindfulness practice. But then there's all kinds of styles underneath that have an emphasis on something. So Master Iyengar is a style that a lot of people are familiar with that teaches a lot of alignment and uses a lot of props. Hot yoga, there's a couple different styles even within hot yoga, but that's exactly what it sounds like. Yoga practice done in a very, very hot room. There's yoga that focuses more on philosophy, yoga that focuses more on devotion. What am I missing, Rachel?
I think in somewhat simpler terms, perhaps, there's a yang style of yoga and a yin style of yoga. So yang would be the more fiery practices that tend to be more physical, more fast-moving, more perhaps right. body-focused. And then yin styles of yoga, which tend to be slower, perhaps more spiritually based, more meditatively based. So I think for people, as Donna said, there's an umbrella, and there are about 10,000 raindrops nowadays underneath that umbrella. But those are kind of the two quickest ways, I think, to help someone understand if they're trying to find what class to go to. Ask yourself if you're looking for something that's going to fire you up more or calm you down a little more, and then find a practice under one of those levels.
You know, think about yoga doing both of those things, firing you up and calming you down. That's pretty good. You mentioned hot yoga, and I think that's been a little bit controversial for some. Why would you want to do the yoga in that kind of heat?
Go ahead, Rachel.
My tradition is not hot yoga, so I don't want to do yoga in that heat, which isn't to say anything bad about it. I honestly, if Wii Fit is your first introduction to yoga, if it's the thing that puts you on your mat for your first time, then more power to you. And like we said, there's a yoga for everyone. So hot yoga has been a beautiful thing. It's much more of a modern philosophy of yoga, but it's brought a ton of people to it. The tradition that I come from, you practice in a room that is moderately heated, so somewhere between 70, 77 degrees, so that you build your own internal heat, so that the flexibility that you have, you're acutely aware you built yourself. That's the school that I come from, so that's what I'm most comfortable in.
I taught hot yoga years ago for quite a while. It's not something I practice anymore. The one thing I would say about hot yoga, it does fire you up, obviously. You can lose weight from it. I mean, it's a good weight reduction kind of practice. It's an incredible aerobic practice. But it's also a practice, a style of yoga that you can get easily injured in because the room is so hot, it overflexes your muscles. And without proper strength and without proper alignment, I've just seen a lot of injuries. So just be careful there.
Maybe start, that's probably not the first place to start with hot yoga or?
I don't want to say that. There's mm-hmm. a lot of people that are successful starting there. I think just, again, going back to being aware of the instruction.
Our phone number is 513-419-7100 if you have a question or a comment. Libby's calling from Mount Auburn. Hi, Libby. What's your question?
Actually, I have a comment, two, actually. One, I'm a person with a pretty minor disability. I have a bone that's turned wrong in my leg, and I walk normal, but it's very painful for me to put my foot straight forward. And I've been to many yoga studios where they come, and they're trying to reposition me. And over again, I have to say, my leg doesn't turn like that. My leg doesn't turn like that. And finally, at one studio, I wrote on my leg, don't touch me.
Because
I feel that people, if it's not an obvious disability, they kind of just forget, which I get it. Not everybody's going to remember everything. But also, I'm a woman of size, and they would say, if you're pregnant, sit like this. Well, I'm not pregnant, but my belly could, you know, like I have to do the poses like that. And so sensitivity to size and different levels of ability, I think it's a lot lost in a lot of yoga studios.
I'm sorry to hear that with your – I'm sorry to hear you've had that experience. Rachel said something earlier about – this is Donna. Hi, Libby. Rachel said something earlier about making sure that you tell the teacher when you go into a class about any of your concerns. And most teachers are really receptive. It doesn't have to be in front of the group. It doesn't have to be in front of everyone else. But just even a small comment to the teacher, like, my leg doesn't turn this way or whatever, is helpful to the teacher to know, especially if it's not something that's obvious. And you're right. There should not be a one-size-fits-all type of teaching. A really good teacher is aware and sensitive to the individual students. Hey, Rachel, do you have anything to add to that?
Yeah, I'd add two things, Libby. First is that it doesn't sound like this is necessarily the case for you, but it's an opportunity to say to the listeners that if you have a specific injury or issue, then I would really highly recommend for some of your first classes that you go to a private instruction with an advanced master teacher, someone who can help you understand how you could then go into a group class and feel secure amending the postures to a way that fits your body the best and then also just gives you the confidence to easily be able to say to the teacher, thank you, this is the best way for me to take this posture for my specific alignment. The other thing is that especially when teachers are new, and we were talking a little bit about the teacher training program, it's a 200-hour training. We hold one through the yoga bar, and every time I finish one, I'm so grateful to have done it, and I'm so aware of how woefully inadequate just a two-hour training is to then put someone out there and ask them to teach such a wide variety of bodies because everyone is so different. So when we try to teach yoga something like a warrior pose and we say to everyone in the room, look down at your right foot, which is the forward foot, and your second toe needs to be pointed straight ahead, that is a cue that is a wise cue for very many people, but it doesn't sound like it would be for you. So it's really, I would suggest for you that you find one or two teachers that you resonate with and let them get to know you and your body so that they can help you feel safe and held and help you progress in your practice.
And then the last thing I want to say, and then I'll let you guys go, is also I think yoga studios, I've been to many where cultural competency around people's religious beliefs with yoga and philosophy practices, and having pictures of Hindi gods above toilets in the changing room is something I have seen over and over and over again. And it's not my faith. I don't do yoga as a religious practice. But cultural competency is something I feel can be woefully lacking in a lot of yoga studios. And I will take my comment off the air. Thank you, ladies.
Thank you, Libby.
Thank you. We appreciate it. Our number is 513-419-7100 if you want to join the conversation. We do have a question from Michael. This was emailed in. He said, have you seen the Yoga We program? Is there any value to doing yoga like this or teaching yourself from a video or a book?
I have sort of a funny Yoga We story, if I may.
I've never seen it. So go ahead. No.
So I had been traveling for a couple of years, specifically through India, and I came back home and went to Christmas at my family's house, and they had the Yoga We thing on the television, and they're like, "Rachel, you got to do this. You're gonna win." So I got on and I tried to do a warrior pose as the Wii Fit was telling me, and I kept failing. Like, I never got to progress past this posture to me that had become a home based posture, you know, a very easy posture for me. And it was funny. In order to do it properly according to the game, I had to do it in a way that didn't adhere to any of the rules of alignment that I had come to learn. So Wii Fit is not my instructor, but like I said earlier, if it's the first taste, you know, if it's the first thing that ever gets someone to take a yoga pose and understand what it is to connect their body and their breath and their mind all at once, then it's a great introduction, and hopefully it will spark the light that then takes someone out of their home, away from the DVR or the video game, and gets them into a studio where they can have one-on-one instruction.
Yeah. I mean, that's whether it's a DVD or Wii Fit or, you know, a wonderful place to start, exactly as Rachel said. But they do not talk back to you. You know, they don't tell you that you're moving your knee in a position that you may injure it. So that's the benefit of going to a really good instructor.
One of the other things, and Donna, I know specifically you were involved in this, and Rachel, I'm not sure if you were, but the whole Washington Park yoga, where there was yoga outside, there's both of you. Mm-hmm. You know, there's inside yoga, there's outside yoga. Are there benefits to doing it outside versus inside? I mean, not on days like last week when it was below zero, but...
I think the biggest benefit of Washington Park was community. I mean, that's what Donna and I both really strive to create in our classes and at the studio, is this sense of community where, you know, every yoga class that we teach is a one-room schoolhouse. There's going to be someone who's really practiced and someone who's newer to the practice. So the Washington Park experience was, and I'm sure Donna will mention this too, I mean, it blew our socks off. It was so much bigger than we ever thought. And it was everything from, like, one of my favorite pictures of the summer was this very young father holding his son above him doing some of the yoga posture. So it's everything from, like, you know, 12-year-old kids, actually younger than that. Moms are bringing their 5- and 6-year-olds. There was an amazing family who had a daughter with limited mobility, and the father would lay her down on the blanket and move her limbs in the same way that Donna was instructing the students to move during the broader class. And then to 70-year-old women and these people would stay after the practice and talk to each other from all corners of the city. There was no East, there was no West, there was no Kentucky or Ohio or black or white or socioeconomic anything. It was just all these beautiful people with the same intention. Let's go outside, let's move our bodies, let's breathe together, and let's bring some joy to our city. It was amazing.
There is something, but specifically to your question, Marianne, about what outdoors or indoors, there is something about practicing yoga outdoors, though. You see a lot of photos on the internet of people on a beach, and that's there for a reason. I mean, you just feel yoga's already about connecting to something kind of bigger, and being out in nature doing it is powerful. But yes, Washington Park this past summer was mind-blowing to us. Anywhere between Rachel and I thought, like, this would be cool if we get 50 people. It'd be 150 to 500 every Tuesday, sitting in the middle of over the Rhine, meditating together or moving mindfully.
Will you be doing it again this summer?
We will be. Yes.
Leon's calling from Blue Ash. Hi, Leon.
Hi. I have a question. I'm a musician, and to help me with my art, I take Alexander Technique lessons, which are
alignment
posture lessons. And recently, I've been introduced to yoga. I haven't done really much, but I've gotten some conflicting comments about posture between my Alexander Technique teacher and this yoga class, which I tried at my university. And I was wondering if you know about the Alexander Technique and you know why there are differences.
I do know a little bit about the Alexander Technique. I mean, it is all about bringing the spine back to an optimal blueprint of alignment. I can't speak to the differences because I'm not sure what the yoga instructor at the university told you. If you're interested in... you know, talking to me personally, we can talk about alignment and see if there's differences. I mean, you're welcome to come to the yoga bar at a class or connect with me there privately. But yoga itself is about bringing the spine, which is the first thing developed in the body, in the womb, back to an optimal blueprint of alignment. And so there should be more similarities than differences.
Thanks so much for your call. We appreciate it. Take care. We go now to Mickey from Walnut Hills. Hi, Mickey. Mickey?
Yes.
Yes, go ahead, please.
Hi, how are you? Should I turn my radio off?
Yes, please.
Okay.
All right, what's your question?
I have a comment more than a question, a couple of comments. My name's Mickey, and I'm a former professional dancer, and I live in Cincinnati, and I'm self-taught in yoga and want to share with a number of people out there who would prefer at first not to have to go to a class. But there is a book from 1965 written by Richard Hittleman called 28 Days to Better Health. And it's for housewives, strangely. And it goes point by point over 30 days. You practice this and you increase it and you learn 30 asanas.
Did it help you?
It gave me feelings of euphoria because the chi, the prana in my body, the life substance was really just moving, unblocked, and flowing through me.
Donna, I'm familiar. I'm familiar with that book. I have it. Richard Hittleman was one of the first. I think he had one of the very first books of yoga for America, and he had a show. He was the first one to have a show. I think it was out of New York, and actually, our own first lady of yoga, Lilias Follen. I think the story goes is that she saw Richard's show and said, I can do that, and taught herself yoga, got some instruction, and then started a show here right out of these studios that we're in right now, WCPO Channel 48.
CT, uh-huh. Very good. Mickey, thank you so much for your call. We appreciate it. Sarah's calling from Clifton. Hi, Sarah.
Hi. Hi, how are you guys
today? I'm just fine. Go right ahead,
thanks.
Please.
Two real quick comments. I know that the caller that called a little bit earlier about body types in yoga.
Yes.
I know specifically of one yoga studio that is actually doing a body beautiful class now, where their main focus is self-acceptance and loving your body and only pushing it so far and learning your limits and what, you know, your most optimum practice can be. And that, you know, is really helpful in just self-awareness and self-love in general. And I also think that a vocal practice with yoga is kind of almost necessary. I know that I take voice lessons that actually involve, you know, unblocking your I forget the energy and oming, and I think that's maybe if you guys could comment on that a little bit too.
Sure, Sarah. Thanks for your call.
Yeah, Sarah, I'd say a few things. There's a quote that I use in class really often that's one of my very favorites. It's by a very wise man named Swami Satchidananda, and it goes like this, that when we judge ourselves, we break our own hearts. And we talk about it a lot at the yoga bar because the yoga mat is a horrible place to practice self-judgment. We judge ourselves a million times a day in small, insidious ways. And the yoga studio, especially for people who have, who have body issues, will come there and it'll be a place of absolute judgment. That's part of why we don't have mirrors in the studio. It's not about what the body looks like in a pose. It's about what the body feels like in a pose. So Donna and I both work really hard to explain to our students through alignment and verbal cueing what we're asking you to feel in the pose, where we're trying to get you to move energy. So it's less about what your physical body looks like, and that way everybody in the room can understand the pose from that energetic place, and hopefully get to a space where they just feel really good and maybe even somewhat graceful.
We remind people at any level of practice, whether they're brand new beginners or advanced practitioners, to honor your limits and celebrate your capabilities. We all have both. And every time you unroll your yoga mat, it's different. But also about the vocal part, Rachel, do you want to speak to that since you do? There's, you know, some people are, there are classes that there's more chanting than not. Mine has less. Yours has a little bit more. Do you want to speak to?
Sure.
chanting for me is a really beautiful part of my personal practice. I love to chant mantra. Mantra is a word that basically means steadying the mind. So it's a way to chant. Often the mantras are done in Sanskrit, and evokes something. So there's simple mantras like the vibration of Om, which is chanted in most classes, and that's just a word that means the vibration of the universe. That's it. It's a wordless prayer, an optimist's prayer. And then there are longer mantras that we'll call into a Hindu deity, for instance, to ask for things like abundance or to have obstacles removed from your paths. I think it's really beautiful. For me, when I do my meditation, I do best with a mantra meditation because it helps me steady and focus my mind. We do a lot of chanting at the bar, but I'll tell you the one limitation is that especially for people who are new to yoga, it can kind of freak people out.
Yeah.
So we try to read the people in the class and figure out whether it's the right time to introduce chanting or not.
Thank you both for being here.
Thank you
we
so
do
much.
Have a number of links on our website. We did have one more question about a person wanting to find a class for someone like herself who's 64, overweight, not of shape. Something slow and easy. I guess just check in with the variety
yin,
of studios.
Yin style yoga. Rachel's a beautiful one on Monday nights at the yoga bar, or anything that says restorative or gentle at many of the wonderful studios around town.
Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
We've been talking about yoga. My guests today were 17-year yoga teacher and Thai yoga therapist Donna Kovret and instructor and owner of the yoga bar, Rachel Roberts. In a moment, we'll hear about a new study which shows how social and emotional education affects children.